Welcome to Keyword Adventure. I'm Matt.
And I'm Kristen.
And last time we were talking about adult camping. Solo, couples, hey, getting out there and adventuring without rugrats. Now, we love our personal rugrats. Yours, we don't really have that big of an opinion on.
No, I'm just kidding.
Come on now. But, I mean, in all reality, it's important to get out there. And in some cases, it gives you the opportunity to get more comfortable with your skills before going out into the field.
Yeah, and one of those skills, which we're going to cover today, is feeding everyone.
That's right. Cooking is important. That's how you fuel that activity.
Yep.
And if the food is terrible, that's what you're going to remember, and you're not going to want to do it in the future. Cooking outdoors is pretty easy. Most of the time, if you're really going lightweight, you boil water.
That's what I do. Yeah, I was going to say, my cooking at home is great. When I'm on the trail, it's somewhat terrible, but luckily they, you know, make meals that you can boil water for, and it's pretty good. We'll get there. First, we're going to talk about campfire cooking.
And this could be as little complicated as cooking on a stick.
Yes.
It is a time-honored tradition. You put the weenie on the stick, you roast it in the flames.
Yep.
Then for dessert, you put the marshmallow on the stick, and you roast it in the flames. This has been something that has worked for human beings for a very long time. You know why the chicken didn't cross the road? Because he ended up on a stick being roasted in the flames.
Well, and I think everybody, if particularly if you're a meat eater, but everybody should try cooking this meal at some point, especially with kids. Put the hot dog on the stick and just see what happens. It's a science experiment.
That's right. And now the biggest thing with cooking on an open flame, especially in the outdoors, is you want to be aware of your surroundings because it can be dangerous.
Absolutely. And part of that, as we all know, wildfires are becoming a much more commonplace thing. There are many places now that have fire bans full time or at least part of the year. So this might not be an option where you are.
In which case, there's actually a few really nice, safe options that you can do anyways.
Mm-hmm.
If you want that, I'm going to cook over an open flame kind of feeling. And solo camp stoves are one of those that you can do because it's a contained fire that's up off the ground and it's going to be safe to use outdoors.
Yes. With this type of cooking, anything that you do in this way, and anytime you're going camping anyway and you're thinking about having a fire or a heat source in that way, check with your local fire regulations to see what kinds of bans they have going on.
You can Google it. It's that easy. Just Google fire bans near and insert the place that you're at.
Yeah, you can check with local ranger stations, conservation departments, police departments.
The campground will have a notice board, and the notice board will have whether or not you can, you know, use an open flame there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they do have facilities like burn pits and charcoal
grills.
Yeah, a charcoal grill that you can use to cook in. It's still considered a contained flame.
Yes.
If it's really windy, come on. I mean, this is those points where you have to use a little common sense with it because it can get out of control so fast.
Yes. And if you're in the backcountry, a good rule of thumb that goes along with leave no trace too is if there is not already an established fire ring, don't make one. It's not intended to be there.
You don't know if it's actually going to be in a safe location.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to leave it just as nice as when we got there.
Yes.
So don't go out and build a fire ring. Just cook with a jet boil or a pocket rocket or whatever. Yeah, I know it's a silly name. Kristen's over there giggling.
My 12-year-old self can never handle that name very well.
But if you're looking for a lightweight cooking solution, it's pretty tough to beat. Now, I'm getting a bit ahead of myself.
And fire safety is a completely different topic for another time when it comes to camp safety overall. The big point that I want to make, though, at the end of this before we move on is, if you are able to have a campfire somewhere, always drown it out. Don't assume that it's also maybe dead and done. Get that stick in there, dig around, be sure it is cool to the hand. And if you need to, use your water bottles, go down to the creek, drown it out before you leave.
Because the coals will hide.
So the next one that we have on our list of possible ways to cook is boiling water.
this time we're going to talk about propane-powered devices to boil that water. Okay, they are by far some of the most plentiful and numerous options out there. They're great companies that have been doing this really well for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Jetboil and MSR are the top two that come to my mind.
Yeah.
Boiling water with a propane-powered device is one of the easiest ways to cook when you're in the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to give you that awesome hot fire, and it's fairly cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You can find the canisters everywhere. Just have to make sure you find the one that fits your stove. Which, if you're looking at backpacking stuff, the nice thing is most MSR fuel canisters and like the Jetboil fuel canisters are interchangeable.
Right.
It's when you start getting into the ones that use the Coleman fuel canisters that can be a little bit of a different type of screw-on adapter. Also, your bigger cooking systems are going to be used propane as well.
Yeah.
So,
this is super handy because this is as easy as buying the pre-made freeze-dried meals and packages, choosing the flavors that you want to have for the weekend, and following the instructions.
Just add really hot water and wait.
Yep. It's one of my favorites because it's so quick and easy. And if you don't want to purchase the freeze-dried meals, if it feels like that's out of your budget, ramen with some other things added in is a super easy way to do it too.
You can definitely adapt this. Practice it at home.
Yep.
And the cool thing there is it's easy. And when you get out in the outdoors, you're not like trying it for the first time or discovering that, hey, while Jetboil has a little igniter system on it, MSR doesn't.
And we'll make this big emphasis point right now. And this might be the overall main thing that everybody should take away. Practice how you're going to cook at home, if you can. Don't try your stove for the first time, relying on it for the weekend if you have never made it happen before. If you've never built a fire, go somewhere where you can maybe work on building a fire before you get out there and it's dinner time.
That's right. Okay, so more different types of camp stoves and fuel. And I want to expand on this a little bit because it is such a diverse market out there. Whether you're going out and car camping, backpacking, you know, living out of your RV, there are different systems that work great in different situations.
Yeah.
And the good thing is some of them cross over beautifully.
Okay.
All right. So propane, this runs everything from inexpensive systems found at many of your big box retailers or Amazon to Jetboil, MSR, the Pocket Rocket, and some of their even more expensive versions, even to the nice stuff like Camp Chef. Cooking systems that will rival the power of even your home range.
We even
recently acquired a pizza oven. Now, this was a Christmas gift. It's not something I would normally find for myself, but that's what makes a great gift. It's something
right.
you wouldn't normally get yourself. And this is a propane-powered pizza oven. And I love it.
Yeah, this is definitely, I mean, this pizza oven, just as an example, is definitely something that would be more along the lines of car camping or RV because the sucker's big.
Oh, yeah. No, you would need a backpack just to carry that.
Yeah. But there are lots of possibilities out there, and it makes wood fire style pizza.
Well, and that brings us to one of those things is planning. So when you're planning your trip, keep in mind what kind of fuel you're cook system is going to be using and make sure you have a fresh canister.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing sucks worse than getting all the way out to your campsite and realizing that your canister that you were counting on being full is only half full.
That's right. And of course, this also works great in your emergency kit at home.
Yeah.
If you needed a way to boil water to cook a meal or to make water safe, that's yet another handy tool to have. It's not just for camping. This can also be for disaster preparedness.
Yeah, and winter storms. We think about that when winter storms, ice storms come through, and the possibility of power going out at our home is that we know that we have at least a way to cook food and boil water.
That's it. All right, another type of cooking system is alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And alcohol has been around for a long time. So you can make one out of a pop can, which is kind of cool. A pop can, a little bit of tissue, alcohol in there, and you can light that on fire and it will burn I'm oversimplifying a little bit here. It takes a few more minutes to
make. I want to see you do this.
Okay. We can definitely do that. I will make a video about, you know, using a pop can for a quick cook system.
I would like to. I've never seen that before. I'd be totally interested in that.
All right.
When would you use that?
Well, I mean, if you're out and, you know, say you have a first aid kit and you've got a little bit of, you know, the alcohol in there to help with your first aid kit and your camp stove got left behind.
Yeah.
You can find a pop can anywhere or a tin can.
Yeah.
So you can make a stove out of it.
Interesting.
Pretty random and cool. You never know what I'm going to come up with. So, all right. Well, I will make that video for you.
Oh, thank you, dear.
So when you see this video and I'm talking to Kristen, this is going to be me showing her how it's done. Anyway, you can use, they actually come in cubed fuel as well.
Oh.
So the nice thing there is you don't have to carry another liquid with you, which in many cases makes it safer to fly with.
Right.
It's not 100% guaranteed. Flying with canisters does not work.
Yeah.
You have to get your fuel wherever you're going to travel to. Sometimes you can get the cubed fuel through in a checked bag.
Interesting. Okay. Well, and that kind of leads us into wood. Believe it or not, there are small folding wood stoves, if you've never seen one of these. And they're great options for cooking using a natural fuel that saves you from having to carry all the canisters, fuel canisters, and cubes.
Yes.
That said, again, leave no trace. You find things that are already fallen for this. You don't take any wood from anything living and do your best to not leave any lasting impressions on the landscape around you.
That's right. And the biggest thing here is it does take time.
Mm-hmm.
Those fires, now they've the good ones, the good units that the people have designed will funnel the oxygen in. So it creates a little bit of a vortex in there and that helps get it hotter. But they are going to take a lot longer to burn, and you're going to be having to feed appropriate-sized fuel into this the entire time.
Yeah.
So you can't just go out and grab any sticks. They have to be sticks of the right size.
Yeah.
And so it can be a little bit more tricky.
And you might, if this is your source of heat for cooking and that kind of thing, you might still check in about fire regulations with things like this, because it really is going to be dependent on the locality that you're in, on whether this is okay or not, and considered an open flame or a closed flame, that kind of thing. So just double check. Never hurts to double check.
And the bonus is they can be adapted to work in a lot of cases, with alcohol.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of pair these two together, is because you can use those little cubes in there and it still works.
That's great.
Matter of fact, we'll leave a link in our description for one.
Okay.
With some of these other cooking systems that you can check out, because they go down super small, they're easy to use, and I know that this one uses an alcohol adapter as well.
Yeah, that's perfect. Now, white gas. I have an old Whisperlite International. This was the cat's meow of cooking stoves back when I was in high school. Let's just say mid to late 90s. And it was kind of like the top of the line, most compact thing that you could find back then to backpack with. And they're wonderful. They also take a little bit of practice. Do you remember? I mean, mine's old. I don't know if they've changed, but there's this little cup in the bottom when you hook up your white gas tank and you pump it up and you wait for the fuel to come into this tiny cup at the bottom of the stove to get to the wick. And it doesn't take many pumps, but every single person I know who's ever used one of these the first time or has been out of practice has lit the ground or the picnic table underneath it on fire because the thing overflowed and they didn't see it when they lit it.
Oh, I totally set my kitchen table on fire.
Oh, no.
I bought it and I'm a practice at home. And yeah. I want to set it up and see how it works. And so I did. I set it up and I set tinfoil down underneath it.
Well, that's good.
I don't know what made me decide that, I should do this. I think I was afraid of the table getting hot.
Okay.
But I set tinfoil down underneath it, and I'm lucky I did, because it would have been a real problem. It was a decent 2-foot flame fire on the table. Luckily enough, it stayed on the tinfoil, don't ask me how, and didn't set my kitchen table on fire.
Yeah.
But there was a fire, and I should have been more careful.
Yeah.
This is another one that's going to be really finicky in the wind.
Yes.
It can be... They're very handy. So the bonus sides of this is they'll burn, they call it the International, and it's because it'll burn white gas, kerosene, diesel. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll burn all kinds of different fuels.
Yeah.
And you can get those fuels pretty much wherever you are.
And because of that, they can take some extra maintenance too, depending on the fuel you're using by how clean it burns. Mm-hmm. If in a pinch, if you're using diesel fuel for this, you're going to have to clean it a lot.
And they do make maintenance kits. Yeah. And the nice thing is we both got these in the 90s.
Right.
And they still sell the maintenance kits and everything. This is still a stove you can go out and buy.
Yeah.
And the reason is because it works.
It does. And it's, you know, just... My experience is very similar to yours. I was camping alone in southern Utah in the desert and lit a picnic table on fire in the wind. So luckily, it just burned the fuel down fast and went out. But yes, I was looking around for my big jugs of water and stuff because I wasn't sure what was going to happen next. The big thing is, I know we're telling you our crazy stories because it's what happens sometimes, but practice at home. Practice at home. Get used to it. Know exactly how many pumps it takes to fill that little cup so it doesn't overflow.
Just don't set your kitchen table on fire.
Yeah, do it outside, maybe.
Or if you do, call me up and tell me about it because, you know, I like to know I'm not the only one.
Do you have an experience with Whisper Elliott International?
Yes. I'm going to start a little bit of the International Society of Whisper Light.
Yeah.
One of the other things with cooking outdoors, and this is going to be getting away from the cooking systems a bit, this is going to be keeping it clean.
Mm.
You really want to try and keep your area and surface clean. And there's a couple ways to do that. If I'm car camping or RV camping, I love a camp table.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I've packed in, brought in. It's clean. I can use it. I can clean it. And I know that it's going to be a safe surface to prepare the food on. And I'm not going to just like chop everything up on the table.
Yeah.
Of course, we're going to use some of the nylon cutting boards. And these are a separate tip as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we can include all this stuff because we use these little nylon cutting boards at home even.
Oh, yeah.
They're super thin, super lightweight. You can cut them to sizes that you want them to be in if you choose. And they're really handy. The reason I like tables is it gets you up off the ground.
Well, it does get you up off the ground, separates you from everything. And these are camp tables. They roll up and they go into their own little storage bag. They're typically about the same weight and size as a camp chair. Mm-hmm. So not a ton of extra space. And it's a little bit easier to use than a cooler because as soon as you start getting ready for something, you're going to need something out of that cooler and then everything's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
If you don't have access to a camp table, then and there are going to be picnic tables there. A picnic table cloth. This is old school. My grandmother used to use this and swore by them. And it's like the plasticky nylon, heavy duty, you know, picnic table cloth.
Yeah.
And it gives you a clean surface to serve food on. They are notoriously heat sensitive, so be careful you don't melt them.
Isn't that the truth? Yep. And it's nice to have those for a lot of different reasons, but even cleaning them is so easy. So, and speaking of cleaning things, try not to cook in the same area that you're going to be eating, particularly if you're in bear country.
That's right.
Or raccoon country.
Well, or if you're going to cook and eat, and then move on.
Yeah.
Because that's not where you want to sleep at.
Yeah. Well, and that said, it's in RV campgrounds, for example, you're going to be cooking and eating in the same place. Just clean your space, or you will have critters coming to visit you.
It could be mice. It could be raccoons. Could be rats. Florida, we're looking at you, Fort DeSoto.
The tree rats.
Oh, is that a squirrel? No, it's a tree rat.
So once upon a time, actually, I was pregnant and we were in Florida for our quote baby moon, you know, and
right.
We went down to Fort DeSoto Park in St. Pete, one of our favorite places down in Florida. And we had this wonderful campsite. We pulled in when it was dark or almost dark, and we started setting up camp. So as Matt was getting the tent all set up, I had the back of, we were in an old 4Runner then, right?
Yes.
I had the back of the 4Runner open, and I was kind of getting some things organized to put into the tent. And I heard something behind me and turned around, and there were three raccoons standing 5 feet behind me, like little gentlemen, waiting to see if I was going to give them something. But they'll climb up in your car.
Or if you're going to get far enough away from the car for them to get in and have a party.
Yes, they will get in your car. And on a side note too, if you're kayaking, just, you know, water version of backpacking, and you're in a place that's highly raccoon active, turn your kayak over with the hatch covers on. And if you can, like down in Florida, bury it a little bit in the sand, because raccoons can figure out how to get those hatch covers off. Even if you have a heck of a time getting those tight hatch covers on, they can get them off. It's not a problem.
Yeah, if you're going to be somewhere in raccoon country, you need to have some form of locking device on camp boxes, coolers, mm-hmm. and those kind of things, because they'll get into them.
They're smart. And rats, too. Rats will figure things out very quickly.
So got to keep it clean, and you got to be aware of your environment. They live there. This is kind of the way they get food in many cases, because we've run everything else off.
Yeah, and if you're backpacking, particularly in the backcountry in national parks, they're going to most likely these days have areas that are established campsites, and then places that will have more of an established cooking area where you can hang your bear bags. Yeah. And I know in Glacier National Park, in the backcountry sites, they had established campsites, and then you'd walk a couple hundred yards away and they would have, you know, poles with hooks on them that you could put your backpacks and stuff up, because even marmots, things are looking for salt and food, and you want to keep it away from your campsite if possible, so they don't chew through things like your backpack straps and boots.
Or your tent.
Or your tent.
So, and the other thing is you don't have to buy a bear bag or boxes or canisters and those kind of things. You can rent them these days when you go out west.
Most of the time. If you go to a national park and you're planning on renting a canister from them, I think Glacier was one of those places that they did that, and the Tetons. Plan ahead, reserve it ahead, because they do get rented out very quickly. And you're required to have them now.
Now, we've talked about cooking and cleaning. Hmm. What do you do with the leftovers?
So, leave no trace. They have a lot of different rules about this. And when I was in high school, before I'd done any training with Leave No Trace, the people that I first backpacked with were hardcore, to the point that they wouldn't even throw the water out of cleaning the pans up. So before, this is gross, so if you have a queasy stomach, before they would soap the pan a little bit, they would pour water in there, kind of swish it around to get the remnants of the food off, and then hand it around to each other and drink it. It was horrid. You don't have
Not
to do that.
For me.
No, you don't have to do that. Oh, it was bad. You know who you are if you're listening to this.
I love Leave No Trace principles. And we do. Actually, we obey so many of those. Kristen's awesome.
I'm a Leave No Trace trainer.
That's right. She's a certified Leave No Trace trainer.
Yeah.
That said, I'm not drinking pan water.
No,
we've
that's
had
an
this
extreme.
Conversation.
That is an extreme. And so the big thing to do is dispersing it.
You can also filter it through a cloth and pack the cloth out.
Yeah. That is the best way to do it. So same thing with toilet paper. Put the stuff like that in your wag bag. If you have a wag bag, you should have one. If you're doing true Leave No Trace, you're not burying toilet paper. You're going to carry it out and just put food scraps like that in with that. And if you're in the backcountry, hang it with your other stuff and carry it out with you when you leave.
So now, if you're not in the backcountry, say you're car camping, RV camping, doing the weekend thing, it's kind of fun. So no matter how much planning you do, you always are going to end up with just a little bit of extra in those cases. Sometimes a kid didn't finish a meal, and you want to kind of hang on to it because, oh, you might use it for lunch.
Sure.
So we have the 12-hour rule. If we know we're not going to eat it in the next 12 hours, we're going to dispose of it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's going to go bad, and it's going to make a mess for cleaning it up later.
Yeah.
We're pretty lucky we've got a Dometic refrigerator. And that allows us to keep food well-preserved, you know, just with 12-volt access.
Yeah, well, and I think the big thing is it's taking us a lot of practice is to not cook too much. You can always cook a little bit under and come up with something afterward that would be like a snack or added to it. So you don't have to, you know, cook for 12 people when you only have three at the campsite.
And remember that any of that food that's sitting around starts to attract those critters. So this it's multi-step. The other thing is if you're storing food and it's above 36 degrees, it's going to go bad really quickly.
Yep.
So you've got to keep that food safety in mind. Don't want to get anybody sick somewhere. It's something that does bear just a little bit of extra thought.
Yeah.
We've talked about the importance of contained fires, no fires, and how to use other systems so that you can still go camping. You just don't have that big old raging fire. And let's be honest. I mean, most of the time, that's the way you want to be because you are leaving no trace. And I've even seen people get as creative as to bring a gas log, little fire pit, an imitation fire pit out.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a gas log, just like you get at your house. It's been adapted to run on a propane tank.
Right.
Just like you'd use in your, you know, your outside cooking in, not the little propane tanks, the big like a 5-pounder.
Yeah.
But it gives people that roasted over the campfire feeling, but you don't have any of the coals, the sparks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a contained system that's not going to cause fires in the wilderness.
And you turn it off at the end of the night.
That's right. Just done. Shut it down.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen that quite a bit more recently in
especially
places
in the
like
RV.
RVs. Yeah, yeah. RV campgrounds, which is great. And more I'm seeing our RV campgrounds and those bigger campgrounds in particular that don't even have fire rings anymore. And it has to be something like that if you're going to have a fire in that way. Otherwise, if you're cooking on what they have there, you're using their grills.
Yes.
There are so many wonderful different ways to cook, and I think everybody finds their favorites, especially depending on the situation that you're going into.
You're right. You're not going to use the exact same system to cook, you know, when you're in your RV as you would backpacking.
Right.
It's just easier to use a lot of times. It's easier to use what's a little bit larger and more like what you have at home.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're backpacking, I've used my Jetboil for so many years now that it's almost redundant. Like
mm-hmm.
I use it like, you know, a lot of people call a vacuum cleaner a Hoover. My, you know, my cooking system is typically, you know, did you bring a Jetboil?
Yeah.
And I could be talking about, you know, whatever we're using that time. I have melted the insulated cover on my Jetboil. So if you ever want to learn a little bit more about those, one of the best things you can do is put the water in, then start your fire, because otherwise it's going to very quickly melt the insulation sleeve off and make a big mess.
Yeah. So. Well, and there's a question. Would you all who are listening to us be interested in seeing how some of these different cooking systems work?
Yeah.
Because we could set it up and show demonstrations. We're getting into the video thing more these days, and that's on YouTube. And so that's something that I would love to cover.
I could even do some shorts for YouTube or Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try TikToking as well.
Oh, my. I didn't know that. All right. It'd be fun.
That's right. So, I mean, make sure, you know, like follow along.
Yeah.
Subscribe. Like us.
Right. Comment or send us a direct message.
That's right.
If you'd like to see something in particular about cooking. And really, I was just thinking about this. Our Coleman stoves, the good old classic two-burner stove that hasn't changed for 50 years or more. We still use a version of that, whether we're RV camping or car camping. And it's because it's easy. And we really don't cook in the RV, inside the RV, unless it's raining, because we'd rather be cooking outside.
Yeah, it keeps a lot of the grease and smell and
yeah.
that kind of stuff
Less
outside.
Cleaning.
Less cleaning.
I'm all about that.
Well, and when it's hot, you want to make sure and keep that heat source outside.
That's true. So, yeah, we can. If you have a particular type of cook system you really want to see used, let us know, and we will cover that.
We'll see what we can make happen there.
Yeah.
Or if you just want to see me make some pizza.
Yeah. Yeah, really. So hopefully this time, if you ask us for the Whisperland International, we won't light a table on fire.
Or maybe I will.
As long as it's outside.
That's right.
So, if you've enjoyed today's episode, come to our website and check out what we're doing over there. We have some new blogs coming up.
Including one covering cooking systems.
Yeah, we have some videos that we're working on. We'll keep you posted on that. Sign up for our newsletter. We only send it out when there's something new to share with you. So don't worry, we won't fill your inbox. But it's keywordadventure.com where you can find all of that.
And of course, on Instagram, we're keywordadventure. See YouTube, we're Keyword Adventure. You get the idea.
Pretty much anywhere you
can. Keyword Adventure.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening today and sticking with us through all these different topics that we've done. We look forward to next time where we're going to cover layering systems.
That's right. You may have seen a silly video out there somewhere. there's a story behind that, and why those layers make sense. Thanks for joining us this time. I'm Matt.
And I'm Kristen.
With Keyword Adventure saying, no matter what life throws your way, the keyword is adventure.